जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 17, entitled The Victory of Hiranyaksha. Reading text 26 and 27. Savarshapugan udado mahabalash Charan mahurmin chvasaneri tanmuhu Murvya vijagne gadaya vibhavarim Asi divam stata purim prachetasa Savarshapugan udado mahabalash Charan mahurmin chvasaneri tanmuhu Murvya bijagne gadaya vibhavarim Asi divam stata purim prachetasa Savarshapugan udado mahabalash Charan mahurmin chvasaneri tanmuhu Murvya bijagne gadaya vibhavarim Asi divam stata purim prachetasa Savarshapugan udado mahabalash Vishvasa Neri Tanmuhu. Saha he Varshapugan for many years Udado in the ocean Mahabalaha mighty Charan moving Maha Urmin gigantic waves Svasana by the wind, Yiritan, tossed, Muhu, again and again, Malvya, iron, Abhijagne, he struck, Gadaya, with his mace, Vibhavarim, Vibhavari, Asedivan, reached Tata, O dear Vidura, Purim, the capital, Prachetasaha of Varuna. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Moving about in the ocean for many, many years, the mighty Hiranyaksha smote the gigantic wind-tossed waves again and again with his iron mace and reached Vibhavari, the capital of Varuna. Purport. Varuna is supposed to be the predominating deity of the waters, and his capital, which is known as Vibhavari, is within the watery kingdom. So I'll also just read the Sanskrit for text 27, and there's also a short purport, so I'll just read. Tatro palabhya suraloka palakam yado gananam rishabham prachetasam smayan palabdum pranipatya nichavaj jagadame dehi adiraja samyugam. Translation. Vibhavari is the home of Varuna, lord of the aquatic creatures and guardian of the lower regions of the universe, where the demons generally reside. There, Hiranyaksha fell at Varuna's feet like a low-born man, and to make fun of him, he said with a smile, "Give me battle, O Supreme Lord." Purport. The demoniac person always challenges others and tries to occupy others' property by force. Here, these symptoms are fully displayed by Hiranyaksha, who begged war from a person who had no desire to fight. Om Ajnanti Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Uta Patakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatan Sahagana Raganatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakanvitamscha. He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dino Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanjana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Rishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpa Turubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bevacha Patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasade Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Beg for the blessings of the assembled devotees, disciples of Srila Prabhupada, ask for your grace and blessings that our words and our consciousness can be aligned with Guru Parampara, Srila Prabhupada. May all the devotees be benefited by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. May Shri Shri Radha Shyam Sundar be pleased. So again, this is Canto 3, Chapter 17, entitled The Victory of Hiranyaksha, Text 26 and 27. Moving about in the ocean for many, many years, the mighty Hiranyaksha smote the gigantic wind-tossed waves again and again with his iron mace and reached Vibhavari, the capital of Varuna. Vibhavari is the home of Varuna, lord of the aquatic creatures, and guardian of the lower regions of the universe, where the demons generally reside. There, Hiranyaksha fell at Varuna's feet like a low-born man, and to make fun of him, he said with a smile, "Give me battle, O Supreme Lord." So the scene is being set for the battle between Hiranyaksha and Varahadev. This is all leading up to this. The Srimad Bhagavatam is glorifying all the different avatars of the Lord. Varahadev is known as Bhudara, the one who holds, uplifts the earth. If you look at many deities of Varahadev in India, you'll see he's holding the earth on the tusks, on his white shining tusks. In this section also, he's known as Yajna Bhavana, which means he's realized bhava, like anubhav. He's realized by yajna, by sacrifice, which means by devotional service. The Lord is realized by devotional service. It's hard to convince anybody, right? Just intellectually, the Lord takes the form of a gigantic boar. So we're trying to explain it to people, and most of that is just on the intellectual platform. You can, according to your conditioning, you may say, okay, that's fine, or you may say, I don't believe it. But both are kind of superficial. The real point is, it can be realized. He can be realized, yajna bhavana, by a sacrificing, a soul who surrenders and sacrifices and serves. Then these things can be realized, anubhav. Jiva Goswami says in his Sandarbhas that if you have some logical argument, the way logic works is somebody can be more advanced in logic and they can defeat you. And then you can maybe defeat them from another point of view. But it goes on, and most of the time there's no realization of anything, so what's the value? But if you have anubhav, some realization from within, that you see something, you truly see it, and nobody could take away through any argument or any logic could take that away from you if you have it. So we want realization of the power of the holy name. We want realization that the deity is non-different from Krishna. We want realization that the Bhagavatam is the Lord himself in the form of sound. Once the realization comes, then you're off that platform of trying to figure it out and doubt and arguments. I remember when I was my first year in college, and it was a strange experience I had. I was just taking a walk one day, and then suddenly I felt like, for the first time in 21 years, my whole life at that time, that I just woke up. I don't know what it was. It was just raining lightly. I remember very clear, just walking down the road, raining lightly. And I just thought, oh my God, I'm alive. I'm alive. I'm breathing. I'm on a planet right now that's suspended in space. I was completely blown away. And I just thought, it proved to me that those 21 years before that, I was completely asleep. I was doing so many things in school and friendships and movies, but it was like for the first time, just woke up. And I was completely shocked. And I started at that time, that's what led to me going to the library and reading books on religion, because I thought, well, religion is maybe saying something about this. They're also talking about being awake spiritually. They're talking about coming to a higher level of consciousness, of purity. All of that is possible. And so I started going to the library, just reading books, spiritual books. And there in that library at my college in New Jersey was the whole set of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada. And I remember thinking, this is a huge book, you know. I saw many individual books, and then I saw one gigantic, so many volumes, and I thought, what is this? And I just took the book and started reading. And I just remember something Prabhupada said that convinced me that he was awake. Because he said, actually, all living beings are servants of God and they love God. But there's something covering the consciousness called Maya, and it's interrupting this service that's meant for the Lord. So just right there, this little experience I had, and then it was clinched by Prabhupada. Like, there's an energy called Maya, illusion, and it covers all living beings. And whatever we believe or don't believe under that energy is superficial. But if we can have some experience outside of that energy, like when we see Krishna, when we hear the holy name, we experience some grace or mercy, then comes anubhav, a realization. Ah, it is true, and no matter what anybody says against it, I cannot believe it, because I've already had my experience. So Varaha Dev, I just mentioned that because his name is Yajna Bhavana. He's realized not by our intelligence, not by our arguments, our words, but by sacrifice, by service. It said that the holy name also is Van Manasa Agocharam. Van means like speech. So the holy name, this point is being made, that it can't really be spoken. You can't just say the name and that's the name. Van Manasa. And it also can't be known by the mind. Agocharam means the mind and speech cannot perceive it. You cannot speak it. You cannot understand it with your mind. All transcendental objects are like that. The mind can't figure it out. The words can't truly describe it. But anubhav, if there's some realization, that the name itself can reveal itself. The Bhagavatam can reveal itself when we're in a proper spirit of receptivity and humility and devotion. If we're surrendered, then all of these transcendental objects can reveal themselves. Svaprakash. Sva means like one's own, and prakash, they illuminate themselves, they light up themselves when we're receptive. So Varaha Dev, you know, if we recall, Vidura asked a question to Maitreya when this was mentioned of the Lord lifting the earth from the Garbhaduk ocean. And Vidura wanted to hear about the fight between Hiranyaksha and Varaha Dev. And so some chapters back, he asked about this. Bhagavatam is you have to pay attention, because it's a story nested within a story, nested within a story, nested in the story, and you can get lost. But it, actually, this is a modern device of literary device. It's called embedded narrative. You know, you ever see a movie or read a book where some story is being told about a person, and then that person begins a story. And so you have to follow. So Bhagavatam demands that we pay close attention. It's a good thing to try to really understand what's happening in the Bhagavatam. But at least for movies and books that are done in this way, even they say that it causes you to pay attention, which is good, but also it gives a certain depth of understanding. Because it's like one door opens, and then you're in a room. And then another door opens, and then the first door closes. And now you're in another room, and then another door opens. And if you pay attention and focus on all these layers of meanings, you get a deep understanding of all these different points coming from different places. So Bhagavatam is like that, right? We have Sutta Goswami is speaking to the sages of Naimasharanya. And then he speaks of Parikshit and Shukadev. So now the focus is on them. But Shukadev then tells a story about Vidura and Maitreya. And then in that story, that conversation between Vidura and Maitreya, Maitreya is telling the story of Varahadev. So it's a story within a story within a story. And if we pay close attention, you get the fruits. You know, Krishnadas Kaviraj said we should try not to be lazy when hearing, but focus, pay attention, try to understand these details, and then you're entering into the Bhagavatam. By making that effort, then the Bhagavatam can reciprocate. But if we read mechanically, anything we do mechanically has no benefit eternally. I mean, the name itself is a special thing because the holy name, because it has Vastu Shakti. It has its own power. Even if you say it as a joke, the Shastra says, even if you say it inattentively sometimes, it still has power. Like Prabhupada gives the example, even if a baby touches fire, he may not know it's going to burn, but if the baby touches fire, it will burn just like anybody else because the power is in the fire. It's not dependent on who touches. So transcendental things are also like that, but the more we pay attention and the more we focus and the more we have the right spirit, the more benefit we get. So when Vidura asks about this fight, I wanted to read Maitreya's response. It's very nice. Vidura wants to hear more details about this avatar, Varahadev. And he wants to hear about this fight between Varahadev and Hiranyaksha. So Maitreya, when he's asked this question to tell him more, he has this nice verse. He says, Sadhu Vira Tvaya Prishtam. Well, he's calling Vidura Sadhu Vira. Sadhu is like a saint, right? And Vira means what? Like a warrior. Tvaya Prishtam. You've inquired in this way about Avatara Katam, the Kata of the avatars. Avatara Katam Hari of the Supreme Lord. And he says, Yat Tvam Prichasi. Asking me this question is very good. For who? Mrityanam, for those who are destined to die. Anyone here destined to die? So he's saying, anyone who's destined to die, it is very pleasing to me that you have asked about Avatara Katam Hari, the avatar of the Lord, because by hearing this, Mrityu Pasha Vishatanim, then you will break the chain of birth and death. So just imagine, if we're in the right spirit and we just hear about this pastime of Lord Varahadev, in the right spirit, we're breaking the chains of birth and death. We're all chained to the wheel of birth and death. And it just keeps going round, round, round. How does one become free? By hearing, chanting, remembering the Supreme Lord, his pastimes in the association of devotees. So he calls him Sadhu Vira. Oh. Overcoming death. This is the real point of life. How to overcome death. The physical body certainly has to die. But then there's rebirth. How to stop this process. This is the real interest that we should have in life. We can get distracted by so many things happening in this world. But how many people are wondering how to overcome death? That means something is very awake in you to have that question and to seek the solution. Here's a nice quote by Prabhupada about this also. I get these emails with just some various quotes. One devotee is just sending quotes of Prabhupada every day. And I just read this a couple days ago, and I thought it was nice to share. It's related to this sadhu vir. A real sadhu, a saint, is interested in becoming a vira. Vira is like a hero, but a hero over what? A hero over becoming victorious over death. That is the real hero in life. So Prabhupada says, by the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the mercy of his servants, one can be enlightened as to what is the goal of life, why there is death, why there is birth. I do not want to die. I do not want to enter into a mother's womb again and remain in a packed up condition for so many days. I do not want to become an old man and die, but these things are forced upon me. Why? Our business is to answer this question, not to arrange for economic development. This is our business, to ask this question and to seek the solution. And then Prabhupada says, whatever economic development we are destined to get, we shall get it. Whatever happiness or distress we are destined to get, we shall get it. Therefore, the scripture advises, instead of wasting your time bothering about so-called happiness and distress, better to engage your valuable time in understanding what is the goal of life, why is there death. This is your real business. So we're also hearing here, before the Lord comes, Varaha Dev comes, there are many dark omens. All these previous verses are talking about these omens. Because of the, even while in the womb, Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, all these omens became, they started up. And especially now that he's here, they continue. So like they have that saying sometimes, the darkest hour is right before the dawn. So right before the Lord, the glorious Lord appears, there is first very dark times. In Sanskrit, the word for these omens is utpataha. Means a very inauspicious omen. Throughout history, there's been people who can read and interpret omens. You know, omen readers. And it's an amazing thing, because if you think about it, everything is communicating something if you have the eyes to read it. The material nature is also communicating things to us at all times, but most people don't have the eyes to read it. But some people do. Some people have, both in the East and in the West. Interpreting signs. Just like when Krishna appeared, we hear about how the whole environment changed before he appeared, right? Padma Shobana. Everything became auspicious. And the constellation of Rohini became predominant in the sky. And everybody was feeling in their hearts some satisfaction. This is all before Krishna appeared. So things were happening within the environment, within people's minds, before it occurred. Also in the story of Jesus, when Jesus was born, who appeared soon after? Anyone remember? Three visitors, right? They say the three wise men. It says from the east. Three wise men from the east. And clearly they were astrologers. Maybe they were kings. They're called kings, but also they were astrologers, because they, imagine the mother and father of Jesus said, how did you've come from so far walking for so long. The child is just born. How did you know this? And it says, and if you read the original language there, it says, because we observe the stars. And we understood a great soul would be born. So we came. They started way before his birth. And they came with gifts, and they gave gifts. So they could read. You know, you can read, an astrologer can read someone's face and can tell their past and also what will happen in the future from their face. Some people read the palm, palmistry. Just imagine, all this information is everywhere. Why? Because everything is connected to everything else. If everything is connected to everything else, then everything is potentially communicating something that may happen in the future. Because things happen in a sequence. It doesn't just suddenly happen out of nowhere. There are first subtle causes. This is how it works. Some people read the sky, the stars, can understand things. Some people read, you know, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that also in the Jiva Dharma, that by looking at a person's face, an advanced soul can see everything about their character. You know, the structure of the face, where the eyes are, the nose, the head. Anyway, this is an interesting science, but it's interesting also because it shows us how everything is designed in such a way, and everything is connected to everything else. So when Hiranyaksha was in the womb, and now that he's appeared, it said that he was having an influence not only in the area of where he was, but Bhur Bhuvasva. His influence was so powerful that in the lower regions, the middle regions, and the heavens, everything was getting affected. He went up to the heavens, and the demigods there, they were hiding from him. There was no question of anybody facing him. If we remember, this is the arrangement of the Lord. The Lord wants to fight. And so the person who fights the Lord must also be very, very powerful. So he was actually powerful than all the demigods. More powerful. And so, there he is, Hiranyaksha, gigantic. We can't imagine how huge. If he fought with the Lord, how big was he? And his body was said to be made of his body was like steel. And he had an iron mace, a gigantic iron mace on his shoulder, and he was just roaming around looking for a fight. He went up to the heavens, nobody wanted to fight, and so here he dives down into the Garbhodak ocean. And all the residents there, they're called here in this verse, or next verse maybe, Varunasya Sainaka. The guardians of Varuna, they were all becoming disturbed and also going far away. And he was just in the waters like this for, it says here, many, many years. Everybody was afraid. And finally, he comes to the palace of Varuna Dev. Varuna is a great demigod. He's the demigod of the waters. He's the demigod of the west. Because also he's also said to be the demigod of the night. Because the sun sets in the west, also brings the night. If we look at this word Varuna, the verbal root there is vri, which means to cover or to bind. Because he's similar to Yamaraj in that people who are transgressing certain laws, then Varuna will punish them. But also he can punish them by sending diseases, but also he can give remedies. So those who worship Varuna are also seeking to get relieved of these punishments that come to them. So he has a similar role like Yamaraj. Yamaraj also punishing and may also be appeased and help. You can make atonements, things like that. So that's why Varuna has a noose, you know? The different demigods, they have their different weapons and they have their different carriers. He rides on a being, some being called Maraka, which is some kind of sea creature. Sometimes it's translated as crocodile. So for this area, this is like an alligator. So Varuna has something like an alligator that he rides, and he has a noose, like a rope, to bind those. This is why in Krishna Lila, who was captured by Varuna's servants when he entered the water? Nanda Maharaj, he was breaking a Kadasi the next day, Dwadasi, and the particular timing for him to complete his rituals, he had to go take bath, but it was considered an inauspicious time to go into the waters. So he transgressed some law of nature. Because Varuna, he's like a judge. And Prabhupada says in Bhagavatam, he's omniscient, Varuna. Omniscient doesn't mean completely omniscient. He's omniscient of anyone who does anything wrong, and then he requires to send some reaction. So Nanda Maharaj went into the waters to take bath, and he was with his cowherd men, his friends. It said that he was meditating on Lord Narayan. Nanda Maharaj was a great devotee of Lord Narayan. And actually, when he had Krishna as a son, then he really became convinced to worship Narayan, because he was already worshiping Lord Narayan, and he had such a beautiful, wonderful son, Krishna. So then he became really fixed in service to Lord Narayan. And so he's bathing, taking bath in Jamuna. And suddenly his other friends are looking around and they see Nanda Maharaj is gone. Why didn't he come up? He went down. You know, you go down, you come up. And they're looking and they're looking and they can't find him. They become terrified. Nanda Maharaj. They're waiting. He's not coming up. He was captured by one of the servants of Varuna. And those servants took him down, brought him to Varuna. So underneath the water, deep, deep down into the Jamuna, then this whole other area opened up. And he was brought before Varuna. And it didn't take long for Varuna to realize, oh, we have made a great mistake here. You have made a great mistake, my servant. This is the Jamuna where Krishna is, and this person is doing, you know, breaking Ekadasi. This is actually the father of Krishna. This is Nanda Maharaj. So actually he honored him deep within the waters, and he gave him a very comfortable seat. And he knew Krishna would soon be coming to rescue him. So he was eagerly awaiting the darshan of Krishna, Varuna. So Varuna has his pastimes with Krishna. So when the cowherd men above, they went running to Vrindavan, and they were just shouting out loud. They were in total anxiety. Nanda Maharaj is gone. Nanda Maharaj, he went into the Jamuna. He hasn't come out. And Krishna and Balaram, they heard that. They became very alert. And before anybody even figured out what to do, Krishna and Balaram just started running to go get. And then Krishna arrived with Balaram there at the Jamuna. And before anybody else even came, and Krishna told Balaram, okay, I'm going to go in and get him. You have to stay back, and you just let everybody know everything's going to be okay. Okay, because if we're both gone, they'll think we also have died. I will go rescue my father. And you just make sure when everyone comes, you just tell them. Some of these details are given by the Acharyas. It's not all in Bhagavatam, but in some places I found some little details that I'm sharing. So Krishna, then he pulls up his dhoti. He's about to go into the Jamuna. He dives into the Jamuna. And he's going, swimming down, deeper, deeper. And it said that Varuna saw. He was already awaiting for Krishna. He was in a spot where he could see from above who's coming, waiting to see the darshan of Krishna. And then just seeing Krishna swimming, Varuna became ecstatic. And Krishna arrived. And Varuna Dev just offered his obeisances. The Bhagavatam says that he said to Krishna, now my whole existence has become perfect seeing you. And it's said that Krishna wanted to see Varuna this whole pastime, Krishna wanted to see Varuna, his servant. So Varuna, imagine how special. He's a great demigod, a great soul. So Krishna took his father back up, came back up, and everybody saw Krishna arise to the surface of the water with Nanda Maharaj, and they were overjoyed. Mother Yashoda was like hysterical because Nanda Maharaj was gone suddenly. Then she came and her boy was also in the water, and she doesn't know what will happen. Maybe he will die. So she was hysterical, but all her life came back when she saw her husband, her son, Krishna. So Varuna, it's also said that he was very expert. So Hiranyaksha goes to fight him, but there's a reason for this. He's also very expert in the art of fighting, Varuna. And it's said that in his watery kingdom, there are many countless weapons within those waters. Right? And therefore, Arjuna. Huh? Where did Arjuna get his Gandiva bow from? He got his Gandiva bow from Varuna because he did some favor for Agni. And Agni wanted to repay him this favor. So Agni invoked Varuna to give Arjuna a weapon, and he gave him the Gandiva bow, Arjuna's famous Gandiva. And therefore, when Arjuna, at the end of his pastimes, and when he was done fighting as a warrior, what did he do with that Gandiva bow? Anyone know? Where did he... What? Yeah, he threw it into the ocean as if returning it back to Varuna. It came from Varuna, and the Gandiva bow, Arjuna tossed it into the ocean, returning it to Varuna. So he is the demigod of the waters. Demigods, some people have a hard time believing that there are these beings that are in control of all these things. But it's actually very logical, because even in our world, you know, we recreate a cosmic system that exists. Why do we do it? You know, we have a judicial system. We have a judge who punishes for doing wrong. It's a person. We have people in charge of the water department. When you can go into your house and turn on your shower or your sink, someone's arranged that. People have arranged that. Heat, air condition. There's fans are going. There's the wind. But people have arranged for this fan. Somebody created it. Somebody installed it. All personalities behind everything. Why do we create this unknowingly, that we're actually imitating the cosmic order of God? Without even knowing inside our consciousness, but we have an urge to set everything up. Okay, we need prisons, we need a judicial system, we need schools, and we make all these arrangements, and persons are behind all of it. So when we talk about the demigods, we're saying the same truth is there on a higher cosmic level. That's all. And the reason why we do it is because God does it. God does it, it's his arrangement, and then we have it in us to also imitate that in a very imperfect way, because we can't do it like he does it. These demigods, their intelligence is almost perfect. You know, they don't make mistakes when someone does some... Every now and then you may hear some interesting so-called mistake, but the intelligence of the demigods, everything is perfectly arranged. Whereas we can make mistakes. We can hire some judge and learn later that that judge was bribed making some particular case, or that he's imperfect in some way, or the evidence wasn't all there and still he made some judgment. So we can make mistakes with our system, but God and his system and the demigods, it's almost perfect. So, yes, both in the East and the West, there's always been knowledge of the demigods. Right? All the Greek philosophers, Plato, Socrates, these are great minds. They always spoke of the gods. If the gods allow, they would say things like, they understood there are demigods. It wasn't some mythology for them. It was actual fact. But as time passed, now we think we call it mythology, because we're so far removed from a connection with them. We're so disconnected, we can't imagine it as possible. But the greatest minds that the West knows, and some of these philosophers, they had no problem. They would sit in every sentence, they were speaking of the gods. So in Greek mythology, also, there is a god that's mentioned. His name is Poseidon. He's also the god of the waters. And it's also, there's many similarities you'll find, that he also has a palace under the waters where he lives. And He also is in control of the waters of the universe, things like that. So you'll find many connections. So, and back to the story of Hiranyaksha. He dives deep down into the waters and he comes to the capital of Varuna, called, it's known as Vibhavari. And what did he do? Hiranyaksha, he actually fell at his feet, but not in humility. It says if he fell at his feet like a low-born man. Why? Why a low-born man would fall at the feet? Because a Kshatriya doesn't fall at the feet of somebody and make a request, please give me this. A Shudra will do that to a Kshatriya. A Shudra will fall down at someone who can protect, who can give something. Please have mercy on me. But a Kshatriya, Hiranyaksha, it says he fell like a low-born man. He also had a request to make. But what was his request? It was a mockery of Varuna. He said, oh, great one, oh, great Lord, give me battle. Fight me. And why is that mocking Varuna? It's mocking Varuna because either he knew he would lose the fight or he had to refuse the fight. And both of those are embarrassing. If someone comes to challenge you, Kshatriyas we're talking, right? Fight me. And you know there's no chance. And you also now have to refuse to fight. That's also shameful. So he got a little angry, Varuna, at this mockery. It's described. He becomes angry. And he said, I'm too old. I don't fight anymore. But, and then his anger, he controlled his anger, but still the Kshatriya spirit came out a little bit in words. And he said to him, only one person can match your skill in fighting. And if you go to him now, it's the Supreme Lord himself, you go to him now, and he will completely destroy your body, and he will also destroy your pride. And while you lie on the battlefield, then the dogs and the vultures will come and perform their pastimes with your body. Which means what? What are their pastimes? Eating and excreting. They'll do their pastimes with your body. So he spoke very strong. Hiranyaksha, of course, became a little angry also, but was ready to do it. Okay, where is he? Where is he? I will go fight him. I will defeat him. This is the bewilderment of the demigods. They're so proud, so much false pride that they can't see reality as it is. They actually believe, I will defeat the Lord himself. And so all of these, this whole section is leading to this fight. And you can know also that if we don't become humble, so much pride Hiranyaksha had. So it's nice that actually Varuna, what he says, he will rid you of your pride. He will rid you of this body and also your pride. Vimsayam, it says. Take away your pride. If we don't become humble, then the way the creation works is that we have to become humbled, either by material nature, by karmic reaction. So we have to be very honest in what we're doing, what we're avoiding, and try to face things with integrity. Because if we keep putting something off, avoiding, then nature has to get involved in a very strong way. It may have to be some kind of a crisis that comes. What is a crisis? A crisis is, you know, that situation that if you, for so long, are not doing what we're really meant to do, which is become servants of God, to give our lives to that, to surrender to that. And then in all these different ways and forms, there will be reactions that come because we're not in harmony with truth, with real life. And so that's why there's always some crisis. But if we continue to hear and make little adjustments on this path, try to face something that maybe you're avoiding in some small way. In this way, you're dealing with it. It may take time. But you're dealing with it where you're preventing a big crisis from coming. Because a crisis only comes when there's no other way to wake a person up. If there's no other way, if that person for so long has avoided, just like the dentist, you go to the dentist, you feel a little pain in your tooth. Let me avoid this. Now it's a sign, right? It's a little indication something must be done. But put it off, put it off. I'm speaking from experience with this dentist thing. I definitely don't like going to the dentist. But for most, when I was young, always feel some pain. I don't want to go to the dentist. I won't tell anybody. I won't tell my mother that I have some pain. She'll send me to the dentist. But you avoid, you avoid, you avoid, you avoid. And then eventually, you wake up. Terrible pain. Now I have to go and get some extraction. It's going to be traumatic. It didn't have to be that way. But this is how nature works. And it's the mercy of karma, of nature. Just imagine if Hiranyaksha, it's leading. Well, we know this is arranged by the Lord on the deepest level. But still, if we take it as a demon who's very evil, eventually they'll have to be destroyed to wake them up. Some new arrangement. A crisis means to tear down and to break up something completely, where there has to be now a new opportunity. Because the person themselves weren't taking the opportunities. So if someone could be evil, they can't be evil infinitely. They can't keep going down further and further into evil. Eventually, it has to be a complete crisis, a breakdown. This is God's perfect arrangement. You can go up. You can be perfect. You can go up infinitely, but you can't go down infinitely. The spiritual world is infinite and eternal. But if you go down to the hells, it doesn't just go down worse, 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 worse. No, it actually comes to an end. It's the material creation. So all matter comes to an end. And then things are broken up, and then you can go up. So Hiranyaksha, he wasn't, it's not that he could just go on terrorizing everybody infinitely, eternally. No, the Lord himself had to come and fight. So for us, the Lord fights us. He does things in our life through his system of karma. But the demigods, these are special beings. So actually the Lord sometimes himself personally comes and destroys the situation, the person, whatever it is. He may come personally and do it. But he's also doing it for us. So when a crisis comes, we can think, this is the Lord trying to wake me up in some way. Yes, actually he's trying to remove our pride of being the controllers and the enjoyers. So when a crisis comes, a devotee from their heart prays, yes, Krishna, do what you need to do to remove this pride in my heart so I can finally be humble. And in that way, then you can utilize me in your service. Utilize me. It's a scary prayer to make, right? Krishna, do whatever is necessary to bring me back to your lotus feet. Very scary prayer to make. But it's actually what we want in the core of our hearts, all of us. So you can say it. You can say it. You can also, but also give me little indications along the way so that it doesn't get too bad. Allow me to see your hand everywhere so that I don't need to go through a crisis. Therefore, let me hear now with attention. Let me chant now with attention so there's no need for some total upheaval in my life. Show me the signs everywhere that you're pulling me back to you. Otherwise, we see from Bhagavatam, when there's an offense, terrible things happen. When there's some demon hurting, by devotees, if they're hurting the hearts of each other and offending each other, material nature, Krishna, through material nature, will have to rid us somehow of that tendency. And it doesn't have to be painful, but if it's something we continue doing and we're so closed off to any kind of self-reflection or taking shelter of God in a true way, then it may have to be painful. This is the brilliant creation of the Lord to bring us back to Him. This is His supreme intelligence operating in everything at every time. So we're always protected under the shelter. We just have to somehow catch that wave of there's grace. There's a wave of grace. Tune our minds into it. And we'll see everything is working to bring me back to the lotus feet of the Lord, where I belong. And then what? Then the eternal, sweet, loving pastimes with Bhagavan Sri Krishna. So sweet, your heart will melt every day. Imagine crying in joy every day. Have you ever cried in joy? It's such an amazing experience, right? How many times in our lives do we cry out of joy? Maybe 2, 3, 4 times. Imagine your whole life you're just crying out of joy. This is what it means to enter Krishna Lila, to be with Krishna, the most intimate, beautiful form of the Lord. Everything about him is captivating, mesmerizing, beautiful, sweet. The exchanges, it's unfathomable. And by the grace of pure devotees of Krishna, it's been offered. We're invited to go to experience this. So we'll stop here. There are a few minutes. Any comments, questions, reflections? Yes, Prabhu.
30 seconds. Who said? According to, I had a couple thoughts came up. Is that first of all, Braha Krishna is unlimited, and he's fighting with a living entity who is completely So I mean, for him, what's the difference between like one of his servants and ordinary living entity? They're all insignificant because they have. Then I thought, well, wait a minute, they were devotees, and we sing in Damodar coming up as Bhakti Bhadam that Krishna's controlled by his devotees. So how did he defeat Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakasipu?
Because he's controlled by his devotees, so how was it that he defeated?
Yeah, first of all, I thought that they're... Huh? Yeah, but how they wanted to be defeated?
When, you know, like Hiranyaksha, of course, is Jai, right? Jai and Vijay. So their mood and their spirit, when the Lord Narayan told them that you will go down to the material world and you will be still connected with me, with your mind, but through anger, and there will be a fight and all of this will occur. So Jai and Vijay just folded their palms. We are your servants. If we can remember you, we don't care what you do with us. And so they had that humble mood. And so this is, you know, part of the Leela, that it was the Lord's desire to fight and to also, he does things for many reasons. But definitely they were in a mood of being, yes, Lord, whatever your will is, we surrender.
Right.
Yes.
It's like they build sandcastles and then take pleasure kicking them down. Mm.
I was just thinking, there's a verse called Jadrishi Jadrishi Bhavana Jesha Siddhir Bhavati Tadrishi. Krishna will give you that much challenges that you can handle, not more, not less. Mm. Because if he gives more, maybe there won't be any success ultimately. So I also feel in my own life, like I felt it is too much, but actually I could handle. Mm. And the transformation is so wonderful. Mm. That's actually I needed, I wanted, but I could not see in the beginning. Mm. So it's beautiful. The way you said it is so true. Mm. And I hope devotee embrace that challenges that comes in life. Mm. Because you become different person.
Yes. I heard this term from my spiritual master that we have to be gratefully defeated.
Yes.
We're getting defeated sometimes by just life. But gratefully means to see that this is God, yes, Krishna, whatever your will is. I don't see why and how, or these things are just a mystery to me, but I know I'm grateful that you're sending what you're sending. When life gets really tough, that's hard, right? But at the same time, everyone will be defeated through death or through some, whatever it is, or just reactions. It's all a defeat. And most people resent it. and therefore they stay entangled in it. If you resent your problems, you remain subject to so many incoming problems. But if you can say, finally, when you can say, yes, my Lord, then you don't have to have any more struggle at some point.
That's true. But as a devotee, this is just my own realization that if we can support, accommodate, accept, acknowledge, and take rectification gladly, maybe with new selection, new illumination, then definitely.
Yeah.
I thought a lot about it last many months. Then actually there is a glorious inner happiness. Outside maybe still burning flame, may not be pleasant, but inner there is a great joy that was not there before.
Wow.
Now it's wonderful, actually.
Beautiful, beautiful, Prabhu. Thank you. Thank you for your words. It's inspiring. Yes. Okay. Thank you very much, Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Srila Prabhupada ki. Varaha Deva ki.